secretariat, and let's actually start our meeting. Madalane, I could see that you were connected to be able to assist us. Let's actually do a quick roll call. Because we are a joint meeting, we will actually ask the whip on the international relations and cooperation to help facilitate the part of making sure that we do have a number which can actually help us proceed. Can I just check with the DTIC? Honorable members, good morning, everybody. Welcome. Can I ask Secretariat to help facilitate with that?
Chair, I'm back on.
Okay. Yeah.
There was just load shedding started at 8 o'clock here in Cape Town, Chair. So, Chair, so, we have. Can I call the members from DTIC for just to acknowledge Mr. Mbuyane?
Honorable Mbuyane.
A very good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Cuthbert?
Honorable Cuthbert.
Morning, Chairperson.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Muatse?
Honorable Muatse.
Morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm present.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning.
Chair, including yourself, we currently only have four members of the GTIC on the platform. Ms. Mutahumi, we are addressing a challenge here. She will join proceedings shortly, Chair. Then, Chair, may I ask my colleague, Mr.
Morning, Chair.
Mr. Simmons just entered, Chair.
Thank you.
I didn't see that.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Honorable Hammonds. Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mutahum also just entered, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mutahum, welcome.
Thank you,
and
Chair.
Good morning. Thank you. Okay.
Chair, if I may ask my colleague, Lubabalu, just to call, do a roll call for the PC on International Relations, Chair. I think he is on the platform.
Okay, Lubabalo. Okay.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Thank you, Chair. On the side of international relations, we have 8 members. First, the chairperson, Honorable Mohamed Tala, the whip, Honorable Mbanza. We have got Honorable Ngosi. We have Honorable Ngola. We have Honorable Cheti, Honorable Swartz, and Honorable Msane. We have 2 apologies. One from Dr. Mulder, who's attending another meeting, and Honorable Mowela will be joining the meeting later. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can I actually then ask my colleague, Honorable Mohamed Salah, good morning. We will actually ask that we fly to the agenda, Secretariat.
We'll do so, Chair.
Yes, please. And if my colleague doesn't have a problem facilitating this part, that will be fine with me to be able to ask my colleague to do that. Do we have any apologies, Secretariat?
Chair, we have 3 apologies from our committee, Chair. Mr. Bern Namashe is attending King's Villa Tennis Funeral, Chair. We also have an apology from Mr. McPherson, who's on party business, as well as Mr. Mulder, who is also not able to attend this morning's session, Chair. Chair, we also then receive an apology from the Deputy Minister Majola, who's attending a briefing with the PC with the Select Committee on Trade and Trade, as well as the DG, Mr. Lionel October, submitted their apologies, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can we actually note those apologies? And on the agenda side, let's actually then look at that. So from the international relations and cooperation, I think we will actually ask If ever there's any issue relating to apologies that we'd like to raise, we can actually then go to the program if the colleagues from International Relations and Cooperation have no issues on apologies.
Chair, they already submitted their apologies, Chair, when Babalu spoke first time, Chair.
Yes. Okay, good. All right. Can I take then the agenda? Secretary, if you can go through.
Chair, we're having the briefing from the Minister on the status and implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, Chair. And then we will have a consideration of the first draft of our second and third quarterly report, and we will be adopting minutes at the end of the meeting, Chair.
Okay. Let's actually get the committee to indicate that we can... How is that?
Mrs. Hermans.
Honourable Hermans.
Thank you, Chair. I want to propose adoption of the agenda table.
Okay. There's a mover for the adoption. Honourable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you. Good morning. I second the proposal.
No, thank you, Honourable Mbuyane. I just wanted to check, is there any objection? Yes.
It's Honourable Mpanza again.
Yes, Honourable.
Yes, I don't have any objections, but I just want to get clarity, so that when we move, then we have the same understanding. I don't know, the chair maybe would say something, but I understand that we are invited to your committee, which we really appreciate and thankful about it. And the main item I think that we were invited for to participate on, which we had an interest on, was the item number, I think it's item
one.
Number four.
Yeah, which always was, number four on the list, yeah, the briefing,
yes,
by the minister. Yes.
Yes. And then I just want to check, because I don't think other items are relevant to us. What is the suggestion of the chair? Do we have to still be part of the meeting for the duration of it until it ends, or if we are going to be excused after we have exhausted item number four, which is the briefing?
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Thanks, Chair.
No. It makes complete sense to you, I agree. Secretariat?
Chair, that would be the process, Chair. The PC on International Relations can leave the platform once the Minister and the Committee has completed item 4 on the agenda. The other two items are internal to business of the PC on Trade and Industry. So those members doesn't need to attend or be part of that session, Chair.
Okay.
You're welcome to stay if you wish to.
Yeah. No, let me just say that then I will ask my colleagues, Honorable Mohamed Salah, who go on.
I'm here, Chair, but then
yeah.
We will over.
No, then I will actually ask Mohamed Salah if it's actually okay welcoming the minister to be able to present, just to actually ask that, facilitate that part. And then maybe I will actually do the remaining part, but I think it will actually be quite important that one allows you to facilitate the session. Can
Honorable
I invite you to take over from
Honorable,
me?
Honorable Mbanza will do that, Chair, on our behalf as the portfolio committee.
Oh, okay. Mbanza, I think the Chair is suggesting that you'll facilitate this part. Allow me to welcome the Minister to take us through the briefing of the issue before us. In terms of the adopted agenda, it's the first item. Minister, good morning. And can I say, Honourable Mbanza, if you can actually take over at this stage to be able to actually help us through in managing the process. Good morning to everyone. You're welcome. I think we actually in the numbers and presence that will allow us to take the presentation. Minister?
Good morning.
Minister, welcome. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Good morning to both chairpersons. Good morning to all the honourable members who are present today, to the officials of Parliament, the officials of the DTIC, as well as the members of the public that may be following our proceedings. Chairperson, first let me appreciate at the onset that we have this opportunity to provide a briefing not only to the DTIC Portfolio Committee, but also the DIRCO Portfolio Committee. It's entirely appropriate, as the content of the presentation will show, that there is such wide and deep interest in the issues relating to the African Continental Free Trade Area. And I'm joined by a team of officials from the DTIC, but I particularly want to single out Xavier Karim and Lerato Mataboge. They're both Deputy Directors General, and they are responsible for aspects of our work on the AFC FTA. So, Jefferson, if I may then go to the presentation that we've prepared, and with your kind indulgence, Chair, I will commence immediately with the presentation. So the slide number 2 is really just recalling what we're going to cover, the challenge that Africa faces, how it fits into the broader development strategies, where we are with the AFC FTA, what still needs to be done, the opportunities, and where our focus will be in the period ahead. And I want to start, Chairperson, with an important reflection on Africa's place in the world. Our continent has 17% of the world's population, but only 3% of the world's GDP. And we account for only 3% of the world's trade, 2% of the world's manufacturing output, and only 1% of the world's steel production. These statistics capture the size and the magnitude of our challenge as a continent. Policy initiatives like trade must change this reality. Trade between African countries remains relatively small, Jefferson, and it covers only about 16% of traded goods. Compare this, 16 to 18%, compare this with trade between Asian countries. That accounts for 52% of their total trade. And if we look at trade within North America, it accounts for 50%, and intra-European Union trade for 70%. So we don't trade with each other. In the rest of the world, people trade with their immediate neighbors. And the low levels of intra-African trade is a legacy of colonialism that's not yet resolved. Recall historically our continent was the supplier of raw materials to the rest of the world, and we've begun to challenge that system, but we've not resolved it yet. We mainly export raw materials to the rest of the world, oil, minerals, cocoa, and so on. And we import finished goods, mobile phones, clothing and textiles, capital goods, and so on. Interestingly, trade between African countries, while it's small, is largely in what we call value-added manufacturing products. So it is the kind of trade that adds jobs and the development. Over three-quarters of intra-African trade takes place within regional trading blocks. We will know of SADC, the Southern African Development Community, but there are similar trading blocks in all parts of the continent. And our strategy is to nurture this trade so that as it already begins to support economic diversification and our efforts to move into higher value-added production and exports. In 2019, for example, around a quarter of South Africa's global exports were destined for the rest of Africa, and 80% of those exports were to other SADC countries. So what the African Continental Free Trade Area, or the AFC-FTA as we call it, is about is to create opportunities for us to expand our trade beyond SADC to East, Central, West, and North Africa. The AFC-FTA seeks to reduce tariff barriers on goods traded between African countries. So that's the heart of it. It's really saying we're going to reduce the taxes we charge each other for goods that come across our borders, so that we give African producers, African manufacturers, an added advantage over goods produced elsewhere in the world. 54 African countries have signed the treaty, the agreement setting up the African Continental Free Trade Areas, and 36 countries have now taken it through domestic processes and have ratified the treaty. We've ratified the treaty, and Parliament gave its support for it, and we deposited our instrument for ratification. Now, what the treaty provides for is what we call phase one measures and phase two measures. In the first phase, we're reducing the tariffs. The tariff is a tax charge on imported goods. We're going to reduce our tariffs on about 90% of all goods, and we'll do so within a five-year period. Now, there are some countries that are called least developed countries, LDCs. It's been agreed that they would have an additional period, so they will have a total of 10 years to reduce their tariffs. Now, once we've done that, we'll take a further 7% of goods and reduce the tariffs over a 10-year period from this year. And again, like I have indicated, with the least developed countries, we've given them an additional period, so they will have 13 years in total. And we will also, in phase one, begin the opening of services sectors. And services sectors would be things like transportation or things like banking or retail or so on. And in phase two, we want to conclude protocols on competition, on investment, intellectual property, and e-commerce. What is the AFC-FTA? It's really a framework for tariff reduction across the continent. It will establish a more open, rules-based trade environment to boost intra-African trade and investment. And it sets up a procedure when there is a dispute between two trading countries on tariffs or market access. It's really, the heart of it is, it's in support of the development of what we call the real economy, the productive sectors. So we've got market integration, which covers the areas that I've referred to, tariff reduction, rules of origin that will say what the percentage of local production has to be, and if we can get our trade liberalization properly sequenced and synchronized with active industrial development measures and with cross-border infrastructure, we can ensure wider and more inclusive economic development and growth. There are some key principles that we've agreed to in the AFC-FTA. The first principle is reciprocity. That means both sides in a trade relationship needs to open up. So we would only give this facility to a country that also opens up to South Africa. But we do take into account differentiation and the fact that some countries are extremely poor and with very, very limited economic development. They call least developed countries, and we have a special dispensation for them, and I've alerted the committee to the time frames. The AFC-FTA preserves the current regional arrangements. So what we have within SACO, the Southern African Customs Union, or SADC, the Southern African Development Community, that stays in place. And this is really about changing the reality beyond these regional economic blocks. The African Union at a head of state meeting launched the AFC-FTA negotiations in June 2015, and it was historic because, among others, it was launched in Joburg, and the conclusion of this phase also took place later when the president, our president, chaired a meeting of heads of state. 54 of the 55 African Union members have signed the AFC-FTA. I'm sure parliamentarians are curious who is the lone one out, and that's Eritrea. The AU heads of state have adopted the legal instruments establishing the AFC-FTA on the 21st of March in Kigali. The agreement entered into force in 2019, and to date, 36 members have ratified. Now, once it enters into force, it means the treaty can now begin to enable the negotiators to tie down the details, because the treaty just sets out the broad legal framework. So we've done quite a bit of work. I'll report on some of it. But based on that progress made, the African Union summit in December last year, chaired by President Ramaphosa, and which was supposed to be held in South Africa, but because of COVID, it became a virtual conference or summit. It has now finalized the legal basis to operationalize and commence preferential trading from 2021. So in other words, all the legal arrangements are in place. Now it requires certain additional measures that I'm going to talk about. There are many challenges inherent in implementation of trade agreements. We needed to lay the legal basis for the treaty, which we've done. We needed to get countries to sign up on the treaty, which has been largely completed. 54 countries have signed. And then we needed to get formal ratification by each state. So the majority of states now have ratified, and there's space for the remaining states to ratify in due course. We needed to agree on the rules of origin, what is the level of value of any product that's added here on the African continent, and I'll talk about that later. The level of tariff ambition, what percentage of products will we actually cover in the first phase of the AFC-FTA? How do we treat developed countries and developing countries, developing countries and least developed countries. On customs procedure, the domestic legislation that needs to be in place in every country to enable them to implement a tariff preference for another African country, the documentation that's needed, for example, certificates of origin, a declaration of origin, a supplier's declaration. Then we needed to deal with services agreements. How do we open up markets and banking and retail and telecommunications and so on? And finally, we needed to set up infrastructure and institutions that can make this work. We created a new body called the Secretariat of the AFC-FTA, and we needed to manage the shifting of personnel from Ethiopia, where the African Union headquarters is, to Ghana, where the Secretariat is now based. There are two sets of processes. Some processes and structures involve all African Union members, and others only involve those that have formally ratified the treaty. If I deal first with the arrangements involving all states, all trade ministers are part of a structure that enable discussion on key policy decisions, for example, rules of origin, and we need to reach agreement in there. We have a number of technical committees. We have a negotiating forum involving all 55 countries, and they address the different aspects of the negotiation. Now, what we needed to do globally across the world, there are 5,387 tariff lines. It's published in a thick book called the Tariff Book. And these tariff lines describe every product that can be physically shifted between countries. So it covers food and clothing and machines and mineral products, agricultural, raw agricultural products, just about everything that you can think of. That is what they call a product. And we needed to go through these 5,387 tariff lines at what is called the six-digit level. I'll refer back to that later. And these discussions and any agreements or deadlocks are then addressed by the African Ministers of Trade, a structure called AMOT. South Africa chaired the structure since September last year. The next set of structures are the ones involving the countries that have ratified the AFCFTA. And those countries are entitled to be part of the negotiation on the implementation modalities. The policy decisions were finalized in AMOT, and the implementation modalities gets finalized in this new structure. There are technical committees here to align the mandates of different countries, and it's supervised through a new Council of Ministers. Now, this Council of Ministers, technically voting can only take place by trade ministers whose countries have ratified the agreement. But we've opened the Council of Ministers to all participating countries, so that even those who have not yet ratified the treaty are able to have their voices heard. South Africa was the vice chairperson of this structure from November 2019, and we were elected to chair the structure since January 2021. So those are the two key structures, the African Ministers of Trade and the Council of Ministers. We've now agreed that these two structures will be combined into one year, in this year, 2021, because AMOT has completed a lot of its work, and now we're getting to the point where, to avoid any duplication, we're going to roll all of the agenda of both structures into the new Council of Ministers. I wanted to give some examples of the kind of challenges in the negotiations, and the first example I give, which I'll go into a little bit more detail than the others, is rules of origin. Now, there are many, many challenges like this, but here's an example. So now the question is, how do you define locally produced in Africa? And that's important because it's only something that is called locally produced in Africa that qualifies for a tariff concession. So let me use an example of a machine. If a machine is largely produced in China or Germany, and just the final assembly or packaging takes place in an African country, and let's say for argument in this example, 95% of the value is generated in China or United States, and only 5% of the value is generated here on the continent. Everybody would agree that's clearly not locally made. The policy challenge is where to set that defining line. Ideally, you'll set it at 100%, but very few goods may be 100% locally made. You set it at 90%, 80%, 70%, 60%. So that's the policy challenge. The approach we took is we looked at each product separately, and we said let's develop a rule of origin for that product, stipulating the level of local content that must be produced in another African country. Now, once we set that approach, we hit some problems. There are some countries that favor a low local content. So because they don't have much industry, they can then bring something from another continent. It could be then just the finishing touches. So let's say the shirt that I'm wearing, if the shirt was produced in Asia or in Europe or the Americas, but just the buttons that to be sewn on here in South Africa or in Rwanda or in Nigeria, then that shirt will have some local content and a lot of imported content. So we've had to debate and try to work through what is the right level. And some countries, a country that has very limited capacity, says make it a very low local content. Countries with a more developed manufacturing base say make it a high local content, so that this is Africa's chance to really industrialize. And the negotiations was to build sufficient consensus between participating countries on what the minimum level should be. After a very, very lengthy set of negotiations, the outcome is we've now agreed on 81% of product lines covering more than 4,000 global tariff lines at the HS6 level, and those now have agreed rules of origin. Similarly, I can take the example of the level of tariff ambition, which is while ideally we need to get to 90%, in reality, what can we get to start trade with, or how to deal with the developing and least developed country issues. The products that we covered is really important for our future trading relationship within the continent. So South Africa is part of a customs union called SACU, the Southern African Customs Union, and its members are Namibia, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, and South Africa. So we took, as SACU, the more than 4,000 global tariff lines, and we converted it to our tariff book. Our tariff book has also got what you call 8-digit lines. And so once we translated the global tariff book to our customs union tariff book, it meant there were just over 6,000 lines. And from this list, we identified 5,988 products that we said we're ready to make an offer. And that covers about 3/4 of SACU's tariff book of what we call tradable products. And the offer covers products like chemical products, plastic, paper, vegetables, food and beverage, animal products, machinery and specialized equipment, base metals and minerals and non-metallic minerals. In SACU, all SACU members have now ratified the treaty except Botswana, which is completing its ratification process. Next, I want to deal with trades and services, because I've been speaking about things that you can hold in your hand that we trade with. But there are other parts of the economy that is important, which are things that people do for each other, but where there's no product, no physical thing that you can put your hand on and say this has been produced. So those are what we call in trade negotiations, it's called services. And we've agreed we need a protocol in trading services. And that protocol in trading services include provisions that are in place now that says these are the obligations of all countries, and they provide for the negotiation of liberalizing our services market. In other words, putting fewer rules in place that restrict what one country can do in respect of services in a neighboring country. So we're now negotiating a schedule of specific commitments on trading services, and 5 priority areas were identified. They're transport, communications, so those include things like mobile phones, financial services that include banks, tourism services, and business services. South Africa submitted our initial offers in these priority sectors, 34 other countries have submitted initial offers, but many of these offers do not cover all the priority sectors, so there's a little bit of engagement now. And member states have indicated that some of them are ready to negotiate additional sectors like health and education, but it's expected that these remaining sectors would be negotiated after we finalize the 5 priority sectors. I come next to the African Union summit decision, the one that was held in December last year. It took into account all the work that has been done. It said, yes, not all countries have yet ratified, but very substantial progress has been made. It was quite pleased, actually, that so much work had been done during the COVID period, the height of the pandemic, and 81% of tariff lines are now covered by rules of origin. Many ratifications took place, including large economies. Nigeria was one of the last of the large economies to ratify the treaty, and the summit then said, from 2021, trade can commence under the new terms. And so we now have the legal framework to allow AU members and customs unions to start preferential trading with each other on an ongoing incremental basis. That means in year one, there will be some reduction in tariffs, year two, a further reduction, year three, a further reduction, and so on. The decision that the African leaders took said that there are 4 minimum conditions that must be met. Anyone who wants to trade with another country under these preferences must have ratified the treaty, and where a particular customs union rules require that all customs union members must ratify any new treaty or agree to any new tariff change, then that must also have been done. It also had a second reason, that the offer that each country makes must be technically sound, verified, and it must be reciprocal, that your offer must be to open up your own market in return for another market being open, and it can only cover those areas where there's agreed rules of origin. The third one was you need to have domestic legislation in place to administer imports. And finally, you need to have resolved all of your customs documentation. We then agreed that while we would prioritize the trade in goods for these 81% of tariff lines, we'll have what is called a built-in agenda, meaning work that must continue. And that work includes moving from 81% of agreed tariffs to 90% and negotiating to conclude trade in services. Work is proceeding on shifting the functions of the Secretariat from the headquarters in Ethiopia to Accra in Ghana. And we are now addressing institutional matters relating to budget and so on. After the summit, we agreed that the work would then now proceed on the new basis. We are currently considering tariff offers by countries and customs unions that have submitted the tariff offers, and we are preparing offers. In the case of South Africa and SACU, we've made the offer. Now we're looking at the offers that others are making. We're examining the technical soundness of the offer, all of the things that I've covered. And our offer has been made. We are awaiting Botswana's ratification. Once agreement is reached between 2 customs unions or countries, or between a customs union and a country, trading can start immediately within the new framework. All it requires, in South Africa's case, I would publish the names of the trading partner in the Gazette, and immediately thereafter, trade would commence. Now, I want to step back from the detail of negotiation, because I've covered the kind of operational issues. If we stand back from that, provided the committee with some information earlier on Africa's role in the world. Africa's challenge is that we consume what we don't produce, and we produce what we don't consume. So we consume, for example, mobile phones and electronic products. By and large, these are not produced on the African continent. They produce elsewhere, and we import them. And we produce minerals and oil and so on, and we largely don't consume those. We sell those to other parts of the world. African countries imported 8 trillion rands worth of goods in 2019, but only 1 trillion of that came from other African countries. And so that statistic, which is very significant, when I made that known to many other African ministers of trade, they pointed to the opportunities that if we lower our trade barriers, it represents a massive opportunity for all of our industries, in our case, South African industries, and for development across the continent. We don't need to take goods that are made currently in Ghana and replace it. We just need to focus a lot of our attention to replace goods that are made in other parts of the world, outside the African continent, and deepen the level of trade between African countries. Our overriding challenge is 10 million jobless South Africans, and so the AFC-FTA must be a jobs-driven strategy for our country, and already 250,000 direct jobs are sustained by what South Africa sells to the rest of the continent. Industrial value add, we must use this as an opportunity to up our game on the percentage of value add in our trade. Too much of our trade is simply selling raw materials. We've got to get more manufactured goods sold and more processed agricultural goods sold. And we provide some data there. The rest of Africa imports 2.9 trillion worth trillion rands worth of just manufactured goods annually from outside Africa. If South Africa were to supply just 2% of those, it would add 60 billion rand to our economic output a year. There are enormous transformation opportunities to build sustainable businesses, to bring youth, women, and black industrialists into the productive sectors. And this is a big earner of foreign exchange. South Africa's reliance on crude oil and capital goods imports mean that we must earn foreign exchange to pay for our oil and for our capital goods. And so selling goods to the rest of the African continent allows us to generate foreign exchange. I thought, Chairperson, that it would be worth sharing some data on industrial opportunities through the AFC-FTA. As I've indicated, African countries exported goods worth 1.1 trillion rand to other African countries in 2019. What do we sell to each other? We sell oil, mainly from Nigeria. We sell refined oil, mainly from South Africa indeed. We sell iron and steel. South Africa is the leading exporter. Ships and boats, Nigeria is the biggest player. Clothing and so on, South Africa is a big player. But I want to point out a lot of this is re-export. In other words, we import the stuff from China and we then package it, and it then is sold by South African retailers who have shops elsewhere. But some of it is locally produced products. I went to Ghana in 2019 and visited one of the stores and store labels in clothing made in South Africa. Plastics, South Africa is the biggest exporter. Cars, again, South Africa is the biggest exporter to the rest of the continent. Flexible tubing, Nigeria is the big player there. Tobacco, Zimbabwe is the big player. And electricity, currently South Africa and Mozambique are big players in the export of electricity, and the top 10 products account for 500 billion rand. Moving on, this table shows goods imported into the rest of Africa. In other words, goods that the continent buys from outside Africa itself. So we currently, and we've taken South Africa out of these numbers, just to make it clearer what is the opportunity for South Africa. And this total amounts to 6 trillion rand. And we still import quite a bit of oil on the continent from elsewhere in the world. We buy a lot of cars, clothing, iron and steel, plastics, pharmaceuticals, wheat, ships and boats, things like crude oil and rice. So that gives an idea of the kind of things that we import from elsewhere. And here we've just taken the top 10 imports, and they amount to 2.7 trillion rand. So these are immediate opportunities for South African industries. The next slide looks at what South Africa exports to other African countries. We export food and beverages, that's our single biggest export, refined oil, so we import the crude oil, and then in our refineries in the coastal cities, largely in the coastal cities, we refine the oil so that it's suitable to be used as petrol or diesel in cars and trucks, and we then sell on some of that oil. We also export iron and steel, cars, agricultural products, plastics, and so on. Where do we export to? Botswana is our single biggest trading partner, followed by Mozambique, Namibia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Eswatini, Lesotho, DRC, Kenya, and Tanzania. So these are the numbers at the bottom that we want to try to improve in future. But we don't only sell, we also buy products from other countries. So if I just look at what we buy from other African countries, we buy oil, a big part of that is Nigeria. We buy clothing and textiles, that would be places like Mauritius, Lesotho, and so on. We buy flavorants that are used in food, gold. It's interesting, why do we buy gold? It's because South Africa then refines the gold. So the raw gold would come and it would be refined in the refineries that are located in South Africa. We also import sugar, mainly from Eswatini, electricity, diamonds, books and magazines, and so on. Where do we import these things from? Nigeria is our single biggest trade partner by what we buy, 50 billion rands worth of oil. Eswatini, I've already pointed to the importance of sugar there. Mozambique, for things like electricity and gas. Namibia for gold and animals. Ghana, oil, Angola oil, Botswana diamonds, Lesotho and Mauritius clothing, and so on, Zambia copper. During 2020, we faced with COVID, and one of the questions that the committee has asked us to look at is the opportunities for trade with the rest of the continent to enhance our development agenda and help promote the ability of the continent to deal with its needs. So last year, we exported about 11.6 billion rands worth of goods to the rest of Africa that can be used in the fight against COVID-19. These would be pharmaceutical products, medical devices, disinfectants, masks, all those kind of things. So if you take all of the overall production of medical-related things, they may even include things like Panado and so on. If we look more narrowly at PPEs, our manufacturers have expanded capacity in things like face masks, and sanitizers and CPAP ventilation devices. And we have now exported about 1.7 billion rand of South African-made hand sanitizer to the rest of the continent. So at a time when hand sanitizer was being made, we ensured that we give preference to the local market and to the rest of the continent, and that we before we export to the rest of the world, we make sure that other neighboring countries have access to sanitizers to fight the spread of COVID. We exported more than 2 million South African-made medical-grade masks. So these are not the masks that we are wearing today in the meeting. It would be the top-end range that are used by doctors and nurses, frontline medical staff, and South Africa has sold 2 million of those. And we hope now in fighting the pandemic that South African exporters will have further opportunities under the AFCFTA. We put a slide in on foreign direct investment into the African continent. It's reached a plateau in recent years. In other words, there's not a sharp increase across the continent. And in 2019, it was about $45 billion. The World Bank has estimated that if we can implement the AFCFTA successfully, and there's going to be lots of hard work on implementation, it can raise the GDP across the continent by $450 billion per year by 2035. We need about $100 billion for investment in infrastructure on the continent, not in South Africa only, but across the continent, rail and road and so on. And these increased industrial investments provide an opportunity for what are called gateway economies like South Africa. We now need to work on a focused capital raising strategy. We need that money. We need to raise that money, and it must accompany the work on the implementation of the trade provisions of the AFCFTA. Where are we now? A number of large and medium-sized South African companies have already established businesses across the continent. Our manufactured exports to other African countries is strong, representing 80% of all exports to the rest of the continent. So we don't sell a lot of raw materials to the continent. We sell mainly finished products. We involved in bilateral engagement, for example, with Nigeria and Egypt to address some of the practical obstacles to deepening trade. And there are key imports of other African countries that represent opportunities for South Africa. So if Kenya is importing from India, that's an opportunity for South Africa to supply. If South Africa is importing from China, that is an opportunity for Ghana to supply. So we're really trying to see how we can redirect trade so that more of the trade takes place between African countries. There are transformation opportunities. We need targeted policies to enhance the entry of young South Africans, women, and black industrialists in the export market. There are already companies with these demographics that are active in the export market. For example, Tami Kowa runs a company which exports cooler boxes to Mozambique. And his business was built up through a partnership with government where we Massmart supported him. Massmart brought him into their supplier development program. He makes these cooler boxes for Game and Dion, but he's also now been able to get exports of the cooler boxes to Mozambique. Zanele Ntsibande sells these internal doors, these hollow core doors, to Botswana. Zbu Mapatiani, who attended a meeting with us yesterday, exports train brake shoes to Zimbabwe is the owner of a big foundry in Gauteng, black-owned foundry. Nsiki Biela sells wine to Ghana. She's just got a big award recently. The Monsi family exports machine cutting tools to Mauritania. Now, these are just five examples that were given just to illustrate that we have some larger South African companies beginning to target the market in the rest of Africa, but we also have these medium-sized businesses that are getting into the export market. And over the next 5 years, the DTIC will nurture and seek to expand these enterprises through the AFC FTA. I've painted the picture of enormous opportunity, honorable members. But the truth is, as in everything in an economy and as in everything in trade, there are risks and there are challenges as much as there are opportunities. And I want to highlight four risks here. The first is that opening up our markets could mean that vulnerable sectors in South Africa could be badly hit, because now we are lowering the tariff protection that are in place to support them. So we've got to mitigate it. We've got to say that, yes, there is a risk. How can we deal with that risk? Because in life, you can't get anything if you're not prepared to take some degree of risk in it. So the industry partnerships are there to address the competitiveness challenges, and that's where the master plans come into effect. The second risk is what we call transshipment. Transshipment is where one African country falsely declares that something that they have imported is actually locally produced. So let me give an example. If an importer in South Africa buys clothing from China or machines from France and they bring it into South Africa and they re-export it from South Africa to Zimbabwe, and they claim on the documentation that these goods are made in South Africa, then they get a preference in tariff treatment. But it's actually fraud, because those products are not made in South Africa in this example that I've given. So that's one of the big challenges. And because we have so many countries that are part of this AFC FTA, it is a significant challenge. It's a significant worry that we need to keep our eyes on. And to mitigate it, we're working with SARS and the Border Management Agency initiative to ensure there is effective capacity to enforce the rules of origin. The next challenge is limited industrialization. If we set the rules of origin too low, it means we are not going to be building industries on the continent. And this is one of the most difficult parts of the negotiation, getting agreement on the rules of origin. And the final one is hollowing out the industrial base by cheap imports. And to mitigate this, we've got to strengthen not only support for vulnerable industries, but we've also got to look at upgrading our technology, our productivity, and our product innovation. Some of the work we're going to do in 2021 and in 2022 includes, for every key sector where we have a master plan, we now want them to put an AFC FTA chapter in that master plan. For provinces, we are working now with provinces to have a district level export plan where every district would know what are the areas that it must seek to build capacity. And the two deputy ministers are leading this work, and we're developing a template on this. The third area is transformation. To identify export champions that will support small and medium enterprises and black industrialists to gear up for the new markets. The fourth area is innovation, and we're looking at an industrial conference with the Department of Science and Innovation consider an innovation strategy to support South African exports under the AFCFTA. And finally, infrastructure. It falls outside the DTIC mandate. So we will have to work with other line departments to upgrade our border posts. Honorable members would have seen at Bait Bridge, for example, the enormous queues of trucks there. So on both sides, so the African side and the Zimbabwean side, the border posts need to be upgraded. Ports, rail, road, energy, trade infrastructure, all of this would need to be done. And so that's on the one side, which is getting the flow of goods. On getting the agreements in place, the trade part of it, this year and next year, we're looking at the state of readiness of every trading block, so that as we get the offers, we examine them and we respond. We're going to do the negotiations on the remaining rules of origin, the priority services sectors, the timelines for implementation of the protocols on investment and competition and intellectual property, and we need to implement agreements on customs administration. I want to conclude by saying that the AFCFTA brings us a step closer to the historic vision of an integrated market in Africa, and it's the basis for increasing intra-African trade. But this alone is not enough. It needs to be complemented by work on African infrastructure and industrial development so that we can take advantage of the more open African markets. It's critical that a range of countries must develop capacity to manufacture goods so that benefits are shared across the continent. And this is an opportunity also to have an Africa-wide approach to trade deals with other trading partners. I end off by saying implementation is starting immediately, but this project to integrate African economies is the mission of an entire generation. It took Europe from the 1940s at the end of the Second World War right up to today to build their trade systems and their internal market. We seek to do the first step of it, which is a free trade area, and we want to do it immediately. It will come with its challenges and difficulties. There's no question about it. It's not going to be plain sailing, but the key is to try to keep our eye on the ball and see if we can, in spite of short-term challenges and difficulties, build this massive market of 1.2 billion Africans producing goods for each other, breaking with the colonial pattern of selling raw materials and manufacturing more goods here on the continent. That's the opportunity, and I wish to thank the two committees for this opportunity to have shared the work that the team has done on the AFCFTA. So thank you very much, Chairperson. May I then hand back to you.
Thank you. We do have Honorable Skumbuzo Mbanza to facilitate this part of the session. With Mbanza.
Thanks very much, Babu Nkosi, Chairperson of the Trade and Industry Committee. And good morning, Chairperson of DECO, Honorable Mahambe Shala. And thanks very much. I will be, as you have directed, Chairperson, on behalf of our Chairperson, who is with us, but not well, facilitate this meeting. Thanks very much, Minister. This has been a very informative presentation, and it gives a sense of hope that at long last, Africa as a continent is now going to be a significant role player in the world trade. But it's a good move, and it's good news for Africa that they can also trade each other and also be able to trade with other partners internationally as a solid bloc, a force that is very strong, so that then they would maximize that for the betterment of African people in Africa, and contribute also to a better world, as it is one of the flagship projects that the AU is driving. Members, without wasting any time, because I think we will have time constraints, because by 10:30, as the program is reflected in the agenda. So when we make our inputs, whether in a form of questions or clarity to the minister, or observations or comments, but we must also bear in mind the issue of the time constraints. And I think this is not the end. It's going to be work in progress. We're still going to engage as both portfolio committees. So if we did not have enough time to engage because of the time limitations, I think another opportunity will open for us. So I will request members, because I might know members of my portfolio committee, but I might not know all the members, chairperson of the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, so that members, if you can use the technology that we have of raising hands, then I will be able to know who has raised hands, and then be able to then allow members to have their bite on what the minister has presented. So the floor now is open for honorable members to make their contribution in what the minister has presented so eloquently to us.
The secretary will help you with the hands that are raised with the name. Thank you.
Okay, but maybe that might not be me, Chairperson, of that, because I'm now a little bit advanced in technology. Even if I was born before technology, I'm able to see.
Okay.
The hand. Yes, when I open the participants, I've only seen two hands so far of Honorable Hermans, and I see another hand from Honorable Cuthbert. Do we have any other hands? So that we'll just list the names, and then you record the number that you are in, so that I will not be coming in and in and say, Honorable so-and-so, you can make your input. So I see another hand. Okay, let's start.
Chair, my answer's Chair. Just so that
yes.
We can. Chair, Ms. Masani, followed by Mr. Mbuyani, followed by Reverend Meshu. We started with Mrs. Hermans, Mr. Cuthbert, Ms. Masani, Mr. Mbuyani, and Reverend Meshu. In that order, Chair.
Yes, no, thanks very much, Secretary. Yeah, can we follow that as the Secretary of the Committee is assisting in that way? So, over to you, Honorable Hermans. And then I think other honorable members have noted who they are following. And then we will go in that way. And Honorable Nkosi, I see your hand as well. So you'll be the last. We'll start with Honorable Hermans so far, and end up with Honorable Nkosi. If times allow, those who have not raised their hands will then find a way of also allowing them to do so. Over to you, Honorable Hermans.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpanza, the chair of the session, and may I thank the minister for this thorough briefing. It makes us quite excited to see that we are making progress in this regard. May I just inquire, we need massive infrastructure development across the continent if we are going to be moving goods from one country to another in across the continent. And we have seen, you know, when we had, I think, when we had presentations on international treaties, how there is massive congestion at most of the borders. You see lines and lines of trucks waiting to cross borders. So obviously we need to have a continental level infrastructure development program. Is there something like that in place, Minister? And if not, what plans do you think should be laid? Because if we are serious about trading across the continent, eventually on zero-rated items, then we are going to have the infrastructure, rail, border development, roads, to move the goods across the continent. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, the next honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Minister Patel, thank you for the presentation. I think it's a very useful presentation to have had a look at, and I think the work that's been done by the AFCFTA Secretariat is, you know, quite considerable thus far, and I think that it bodes well for not just us in South Africa, but for our continent too. I think that every opportunity for us to liberalize trade, we need to take that opportunity. And I think that this is a great step forward in terms of us liberalizing our economy. But Minister Patel, what I would like to understand is what is our, you know, overall trade strategy as South Africa, and what is it underpinned by? Because in many respects, we speak protectionism, trying to protect local industries, you know, disallowing creative disruption, and, you know, a lack of liberalization. But we have now signed up and ratified the AFCFTA, but we are not willing to pursue bilateral trade agreements with other countries, particularly our BRICS partners. What are your thoughts on that? And if you could inform us as to what your strategy is in dealing with this. A recent meeting ago, I spoke to the DG and I, you know, highlighted the need for us to pursue a free trade agreement with our BRICS partners such as China, because I believe that there was, you know, ample opportunity for us to boost trade in that respect, particularly within the agricultural sector. And I think that, you know, it was dismissed offhand and then brought back to say, well, you know, Mr. Karim will come and explain to us exactly what it is that, you know, the hesitations are to pursue such a trade deal. Now, what can we expect, you know, in terms of trade relations with BRICS partners going forward? And, you know, what is that, once again, underpinning strategy that you're following? Because as far as I understand, the last time our trade policy as a country was updated was in 2012. And prior to that, that particular document was first introduced, I think, in 2008. I do stand to be corrected, however. But the last point I would like to make, Minister, is the fact that I think it's incredibly important that we have a guiding light and, you know, a set of objectives that we want to achieve. I think you've well established what it is your industrial policy is going to be, but it seems rather vague on the trade policy front. And I'd just like a little bit more clarity from you, and I'm not sure if the purview of this session will allow us to go into much detail about this, but I would definitely like to ask that we set up a separate session then to discuss our trade strategy in more broad terms, and also, you know, what the department is doing to refresh our trade policy and ensure that it is, you know, adequately reviewed by the relevant organizations like the WTO, and make sure that it has an impact on job creation in our country and obviously boosting trade. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Cuthbert. Honorable Mbuyane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity as well. Let me first welcome the presentation by the Minister. It's an eye-open. We're able at least to measure as an agency what is happening around the FTC Chairperson, I just want to have some few bites because of the issue of South Africa produce or South Africa consumes what they don't produce. To me, we really need to have a business strategy. What is it that we want to do? Because South Africa has got a lot of raw material that is just exported. So I just want to check what is it that we have in place to deal with. Jefferson, the other one is the issue of the structure, the AMOT, African Minister of Trade and Council of that. I'm happy because the minister is saying they are to be integrated into one because this whole lot of structures separated. I think it will cause confusion. And also appreciate, Chairperson, I heard that they said the Secretary General of the AFSA is from South Africa. So it is important in terms of administrative and the ministerial part. But also, Chair, the 31% of clothing that we get, I'm not so sure whether we produce it in South Africa. Or is the process that we just alluded to, that to say, taking goods from China, then we repackage, then we sell. Then I just wanted to check that because really on this front, the 31% is if we are to transform further from South Africa to other African countries. I also need clarity maybe on the risk and mitigation. A vulnerable sector like our sugar industry, transshipment, we have challenges of road infrastructure as big. So is the program of the FACAT a part of the economic recovery of the president? Maybe I'll pause there for now, Chairperson, for come back. And I'll also propose that we have further engagement on this matter as this would portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbuyane. Welcome, Honorable Zungu. We see that you have joined us now. And then Honorable Sani.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation to the Minister. I have a few questions to the Minister, with the first one being, I have heard a lot on trade and on goods, but nothing has been said, Honorable Minister, with regards to the free movement of African people. As you may know, that for goods to be moved in the African continent, we need people also to be free to move in the African continent. And you may know that already there has been the free movement of people protocol, which was done by the AU, and SADC requested that they need to just look at a few items in order for us to belong to that treaty. How far has SADC come? Because as we can remember, the last document that came was from Home Affairs in November 2019, where the SADC had drafted a draft on what are the items that would need to be addressed, such as our border post systems as SADC, in order to get our people to move freely. So I just want to check, how far has SADC and South Africa been in their process of us belonging to that treaty of the free movement of people? Because I believe that movement of people should go hand in hand with the movement of goods. It would be very pointless to have our people being stuck in border posts while we are pushing for trade. Secondly, I would like to touch on the issue of the Program for Infrastructure Development in the African continent. As Minister may be aware, that there was a PETA week which happened earlier in the year, and a lot of issues were highlighted by this Program of Infrastructure Development, such as transportation, electricity, water services in the African continent, where you find that from one region to another in the African continent, the transport system, such as your rail network, is not synchronized. So how is the African continent planning on getting the program in place in order to quickly and speedily facilitate our transportation system, our electricity system, in order to assist with industries in different countries? As you may know, that South Africa is also facing a crisis of load shedding, which is impacting greatly on industries in the South African country. Also, Minister, how will South Africa make sure that the African Continental Free Trade Area translates into massive industrial and manufacturing development in the country? Do we have a set plan on how we get massive industrialization in our country? Because as you have mentioned, that South Africa imports and then exports about 31% of its clothing. We seriously need to increase our industries in South Africa. Also, Minister, as you may be aware, that the African continent is experiencing about $88.6 billion of illicit financial flows. So how will this African Continental Free Trade Area assist in reducing the illicit financial flows in the continent? Because I have not heard Minister mention anything on the trade of how will the African continent be implementing this African Continental Free Trade Area. What currency will we be using? How will the African continent be trading when it comes to its currency? And my last one, Chair, the rules of the rules of origin. The minister is mentioning quite a disturbing benchmark of negotiation with other African countries to say they can set local content to whatever percentage. I would say, Minister, should we not be looking at a point of saying that the local content should not be below a certain percentage, maybe 50%, because for example, if a least developed country comes and says that we want our local content to be 10% on this product, basically that takes us back then to say that 90% of that local content product will be from another country. So I think we should be able to set a benchmark on what is the minimum that we can say can be a percentage of that local content product, Minister. And also my last one, you may be aware that the AU is currently suffering from capacity deficit, and they are not doing a very good job in many spheres as a body, Minister, if we have to be honest. I will make a good example with the AU Peace and Security. They're failing dismally, and a lot of structures within this body are failing the continent dismally. How can you bring us as South Africans and our region to believe that the AU will make a success of this African Continental Free Trade Area if they have so far failed in many, many, many positions that they needed to assist the African continent, and also the regional economic community? How are they going to be integrated in order to conform to this African Continental Free Trade Area? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Honorable Msani, Honorable Reverend Mshew.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. I must also appreciate the presentation that was made by Honorable Minister. It has been very, very informative. Obviously, I was a bit disappointed to hear that Africa has 17% of population, but contribute only 3% of the world's GDP. I would like to know from the minister whether there is any intention, any goal, or any plan to correct these numbers that don't look good at all. Because if Africa consists of only consumers, and we don't produce enough to an extent that we only contribute 3% of the world's GDP, it does not bode well for us as a continent, and it makes other people obviously not to have the respect they should on Africa, because we are just seen as failing to contribute but only eating and consuming. So I want to know if there is a plan, if there is a strategy, what is it to change this figure so that we also start contributing more to the world's GDP. Trade between African countries covers only 16-18% of traded goods. How does the legacy of colonialism impact on trade between African countries? Because the minister did mention it as one of the impediments. So how does the legacy of colonialism impact on trade between African countries? And the next question has to do with the foreign direct investment into Africa. We hear that it has plateaued. Can the minister tell us what are the causes or contributing factors that have caused this foreign direct investment into the country, into the continent, to plateau? Can it be that that foreign direct investment that was coming to Africa has been redirected to another country, which would be a great loss for us? So if you know what are the causes and how and whether there are plans to correct this so that we will have more foreign direct investment into the continent. The minister tried to explain why South Africa buys gold and diamonds from other countries, and it was in one short statement. I would want the minister to elaborate on that. Why is South Africa, that is, if not the top, but among the top gold producing countries, seeing the need to buy gold in other countries? And the last one, South Africa is selling about 11 billion rands worth of electricity to other countries. What I want to know from that, Chairperson, is whether these countries that are buying electricity from South Africa are also affected by load shedding. If not, what is being done to ensure that they are not affected by load shedding, so that maybe the same could be considered for South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Siyabonga babu mfundisi. Babu Nkosi, hayi lo sherithi meeting lo oseke committee lakadiko. Singakunikeza ithuba. Over to you, Honorable Nkosi. Honorable Ngozi, can you please unmute your mic?
Am I audible now?
Yes.
Okay. I think the input was very good from the minister. What I observe is that it is trade intensive, that will define its future, and in fact, that is the purpose. My question relates to, I think, three principal things. Firstly, is that in line with Honorable Misha's issue on colonization, what would be the impact of country-to-country bilateral trade between African powerhouses in trade, say South Africa, Nigeria, and the rest, with the US, with France, with the European Union as a union, and as individual countries, and also in that regard with Britain, because these countries have got a huge footprint in terms of trade and a commerce in the continent, which dates back to colonial periods. And that has always been skewed towards these countries, and the foothold is so entrenched that in some instances countries are unable to untangle themselves from those relationships, whether they are beneficial or not beneficial. The second question is that in our terms as South Africa, would the minister say that the location, penetration, and extent of trade in the continent justifies us extending diplomatic relations in the continent or maintaining what we have? Because to that extent, I think our presence in the continent is going to be significant in determining how far we go as far as ensuring that this agreement is given fruition, both for the interest of the country and the continent. And we cannot do that if we do not have a presence. The third question, Chair, is much more related to how the modalities between DECO and DTI work in relation to reporting on this issue. I think from where I sit, I think DECO is responsible for lack of a better word, let's say the political governance of the treaty, and also responsible for ensuring that it negotiates further trade agreements. But the detail, as enunciated by the minister, largely belongs to the Department of Trade. And my question then is, how are they splitting the reporting? Are we not going to experience double reporting, where DECO also reports on trade in percentage terms and in money terms, when in fact that work is done and by DTIC and reported by DTIC as their outputs in the annual reports? I suggest, Chairperson, that in concrete terms, that maybe on a 6-monthly basis, that we have this type of joint briefing on the progress made in the implementation of the treaty, because this will obviate the duplication, but also will ensure that we have a comprehensive report on progress that is being made in the implementation. Thank you very much.
No, thanks very much, Honorable Ngozi. I think you were the last from the first round, but I would want myself also to piggyback on your last question, so that when Minister Patel responds, can cover that one as well. It's on the issue of oversight on areas like this one of the African Continental Free Trade. That how are we going to be doing the oversight as two departments? And I think maybe this is food for thought, not only for Minister Patel to respond on, but maybe the chairperson, Ubaba Nkosi, no Mama, Umahambe Hlala, maybe to look at that issue and see how are we going to maybe create a platform. It could be even a kind of an ad hoc committee that can then make sure that on top of what Honorable Nkosi is raising in terms of reporting and also the proposal is making in terms of 6 months joint meetings of these committees, but we also look at the aspect of the oversight because we do have that responsibility as a both portfolio committees in making sure that we call oversight areas of mutual interest, such as the one that we are dealing with. Now, let me hand over to you, Minister Patel, to respond to the inputs of the honorable members. And then if time permits, if there are areas that have not been covered very well, and also members who did not raise their hands in this first round, then we will then deal with that matter after your response. Over to you, Minister Patel.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpanza, and thank you for the warm comments that a number of honorable members have made about the work on the AFC-FTA. I start with Honorable Herman's question on infrastructure development. And indeed, Honorable Herman, there is currently an arrangement in place. It's called the Presidential Infrastructure Champions Initiative. And it was initiated following a suggestion by South Africa a number of years back. And what is called PICI brings together efforts of heads of state to try to attract investment into African infrastructure. President Ramaphosa has particular responsibilities around the North-South Corridor, as an example, and the line ministers in different areas work then with their counterparts to attract investment. For example, we went to the World Economic Forum to do a pitch to investors on the opportunities around infrastructure development across the country, across the continent. And of course, in the case of South Africa, there is some cross-border infrastructure, not only the ones at ports of entry or indeed border posts, but also in, for example, this major program that we have with Lesotho around water, the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, which entails Lesotho providing water to South Africa. On the congestion at border posts, that's a particularly sharp and immediate issue that in light of the AFC-FTA, it will now be a bigger focus of budget discussions in government. Of course, all budget discussions are always difficult because when you've got to divide the fixed resource of revenue, you've got to make trade-offs between these. But I think the focus now, because of the Continental Free Trade Area, it's given good oxygen to the call for upgrading the border posts. Honorable Cuthbert, thank you for your comments. The work that has been done, the enormous amount of work that you see reported today and previously, is in fact the work that has been done by officials from the different government departments across the African continent. In the case of South Africa, our officials, in fact, played quite a critical role, chairing many of the meetings, acting as a critical connector between different positions and trying to develop a common position across the continent. And it's been an extremely important part of the work of the DTIC. In fact, the new head of the AFC-FTA Secretariat is an ex-official of the DTIC. The person who chaired the meetings of the negotiating forum is currently from the DTIC. The person I've chaired the meetings of the Council of Ministers from now and Amut previously. Now, I point that out because
it does mean that in our resource reorganization inside the department, we've had to put a lot more effort, energy, and resources into this area of work. And in a fixed fiscal environment, it means shifting priorities around to enable the release of staff and person power to do on this work. And I want to pay tribute to staff who've done enormously important work, including in the COVID period under very difficult circumstances. On the trade strategy, I think it's a relatively clear position, Honorable Cuthbert, and I was somewhat puzzled by the sense that it's not clear. Let's start with the first issue, which is, what is our position in terms of the policy direction? Very, very simply, we're building localization for us. It's about building local industrial capability for the South African market and for global markets. It's building that dynamic firms that we need. At the same time, across the world, there are basically two views on trade. The one is what I would regard as the naive view, which frankly nobody holds anymore. And that simply says, lower all of your tariffs, have no trade policy other than to open your markets and hope out of that that your industries will grow. Everywhere, China has a trade policy that protects critical parts of the Chinese economy, as does the United States, as does the European Union, as does Brazil, and so on. And so South Africa's policy is, trade is a means of supporting and nurturing industrial development. Our key point is to try to build strong, dynamic, competitive industries and firms that are able to produce goods at good quality, reasonable prices, and with product innovation. So that's where we head with our overall trade policy. Now, from there, the question is, how do you then engage with the rest of the world on it? So the first part of our policy is where we have mutual and that we think provides mutual benefits is where you have preferential access to another market. So South Africa has negotiated a preferential access arrangement with the European Union. We recently negotiated one with the United Kingdom in the context of Brexit, and we have one with the United States through the Africa Growth and Opportunities Act passed by the U.S. Congress. So that's one layer to it. The second layer is where we have preferential agreements with developing countries. So in the case of Brazil, we have a PTA covering a select number of products. Third, we have what we call the MFN, the Most Favored Nation Arrangement, which is WTO-level arrangements in place with countries like China, India, and others. And that means we provide them with access to our market in terms of the commitments we've put to the World Trade Organization. So those binding commitments then apply there. And then where we're focusing on deeper integration is on the African continent. This is the big project for us, more than any of the others. All trade relations are important. We sell an enormous amount of raw materials to China, and we say to the Chinese government that it needs to change, the composition of trade needs to change. We can't sell simply agricultural products and mining products. We also need to sell manufactured products and agro-processed products to the Chinese markets. And so as we navigate this, China remains an important export market for some of our goods, but we need to change that trading relationship. Europe is important for us, as is the United States, but in the engagement, we have to find ways in which we can expand value-added manufacturing. We've done relatively well in export of cars to the European Union, and it's now one of the significant areas of export and one of the successes of our industrialization program, and we need to, off the back of that, do even more in other products. One of the things that we're cautious about is you don't lower your tariffs to zero in instances where another country has an industrial structure that is bigger, stronger, more competitive than you, without first fixing the challenges in your own industry. We tried that route. We did it in the early 1990s with the end of apartheid and the start of the World Trade Organization. We rapidly opened up our industrial space. What is the result? The result has been deep deindustrialization. We lost thousands and thousands of jobs in the clothing industry. And we've learned from that that what we need is a measured, thoughtful strategy. It's the kind of thing that I think Reverend Meshwe was pointing to, which I want to concur with. The point that was raised by Honorable Mbuyane, I think it's that kind of strategy. So trade opens markets. Of course, in that negotiation, it's not entirely a take. You've also got to give, but you work out very carefully. You do a careful analysis of which sectors you open, the extent to which you open it, and so on. And doing a free trade area with a country that has a much, much larger industrial base, where they've got enormous capability, would simply lead to a flood of imports, a massive destruction of South African jobs, a growth in our unemployment levels, and a deeper and deeper deindustrialization. Someone asked the other day, well, shouldn't South Africa just simply focus on what it appears to have comparative advantage in, which is mining and agriculture? That is the road that many African countries have taken in the past. If you look at the trade profile of most countries on the continent, they export agriculture and they export mining products. And those economies remain very, very weak. Their GDP per capita are very low. And that has been the curse of colonialism that I want to come to when I speak to Honorable Meshwe's question. So I think fundamentally our trade strategy is very clear. It's about implementation now. It's about making sure that it's the deep engagement with China that begins to change the trade profile there. It's focusing on how we can maximize the opportunities in the European Union markets and so on. Moving then to the question raised by Honorable Mbuyane, the slide that I referred to, Honorable Mbuyane, where I said Africa consumes what it doesn't produce and it produces what it doesn't consume, applies by and large to the continent taken as a whole. South Africa, there's a few other countries, Egypt, Morocco, a few other countries that have much more developed industrial structures, where in fact we are now able to produce some of what we consume, and we consume some of what we produce. But even in the case of South Africa, though we have quite a significant manufacturing base, we still have a long way to go to ensure deeper beneficiation of South African produced minerals, because it's taking a raw material through the stages of transformation where jobs are created, profits are generated, industrial and economic development is fostered and so on. And when you look around the world, countries that have sophisticated economies are countries that have been able to master the art of advanced manufacturing. And that's what we need to do increasingly as South Africa. And that's why the focus on localization that the president has put in SONA and that is in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan is a fundamental pillar. It builds competitive, strong local industries for the domestic market and for global markets. So Honorable Mbuyane, on the question of the Secretary General, I have indicated to you he hails from the DTIC. He cut his teeth here in the department working with us, and he now has the responsibility, he was appointed last year, and he has the responsibility to ensure that we now implement that which has been agreed to by all of us, and we work closely with him and we wish him well in all the work that lies ahead. On the question of clothing, textile, footwear and leather exports that
Honorable Mbuyane, you mentioned, and it was also picked up by one of the other honorable members. I should indicate what we do is, because South African retailers are in many other African countries. If you take a company like Same as the Price, they would buy their goods. Some of it would come from South African producers, some would come from neighboring countries like say Lesotho, and some of it would come from China. They would then bring it all together in their big warehouses, and from there it would then be sent off to their stores elsewhere. Now that would be counted as exports originating from South Africa in the trade data, but the source of that is China. It's not transshipment. There's nothing, no false declarations. There's no preferential benefit that they get from doing it this way. It's how they have organized their business. Then we also export some products that are made here in South Africa. I mentioned, for example, being in Accra and visiting the stores and finding South African-made clothes and South African-made food and so on. So I put an asterisk on that slide to say, though the clothing and textile story looks very good, some of it is re-export. Some of it would be product that are sourced perhaps in Lesotho, brought to the headquarters in Johannesburg or Durban, as the case may be, and then re-exported to other African countries. I hope that clarifies that one. Where there's the opportunity is, instead of buying that clothing from China, hopefully more of it will be bought from South African producers, but also from other African countries. Moving on to the question of risk mitigation, Honorable Mbuyane, you've put your finger on quite an important challenge in all negotiations. And every negotiation is a little bit of give and take, but it's keeping your eye on making sure that you don't drop that which is so significant, that you don't do a bad trade by giving up something quite fundamental for something quite small in return. So trade negotiators, their day-to-day work, you can call it their bread and butter, is to make sure that there's an equivalence in what is being put on the table. So South Africa remains a very big producer of sugar. You mentioned sugar, Honorable Mbuyane. And in fact, I think we may well be Africa's biggest sugar producer. And we export some of our sugar, but we use quite a bit of our sugar domestically. Now here's the interesting relationship between trade and industrial development. Because there are challenges that the sugar industry needs to address to make itself more competitive and strengthen its ability in the long term to survive and to prosper. And that now is being done in the Sugar Master Plan. I wouldn't bring it in under the report on the AFC-FTA, even though these things are all ultimately connected to each other. They all try to talk to the same thing, which is how to grow your sugar industry, how to grow your food processing industry, and so on. But for purposes of simplifying the matter at a policy level, we work in streams, and increasingly in the DTIC, it's about integrating these different streams. So today I'm joined not only by Xavier Karim, who heads the trade negotiation part of it, but also Lerato Mataboge, who then heads the export effort to make sure that we now move our goods into these the new opportunities in African markets. So greater integration is what we're going to do, and honorable members will see that that's the single biggest innovation in our annual performance plan when we come to the committee on it. Honorable Msane, thank you for your questions. On the free movement of people, that falls outside the scope of trade negotiations. That is a matter, as you would be familiar with, in the African Union, with a treaty and protocol on the matter, and that is covered normally by other departments of state in South Africa. It would be Home Affairs, DIRCO, other ministers that would be responsible for that. There's a complex relationship between free movement of people and free movement of goods. In fact, in the case of the European Union, where because
they don't only have a free trade area, they've got what they call a single internal market. It's the most advanced form of economic integration. And in that case, it's caused quite a bit of the challenges, and many commentators would say that one of the reasons why the UK left the European Union, why Brexit took place, was around issues related to the free movement of people, where many there was the contention by British politicians that jobs were being lost in Britain as a result of plumbers and electricians and others coming from other parts of the European Union. Now, you have free trade agreements that are not linked to free movement of people. For example, NAFTA in North America is a free trade agreement, but that doesn't encompass the right of people to move in that free trade area. So these are discussions that no doubt many policymakers and legislators will draw the connection between them, but they're in different streams of discussions in the African Union, and so that has not come into the trade stream. On infrastructure development, thank you for the reference to PIDA and PIDA Week, and I spoke at PIDA Week to identify what are the infrastructure consequences and needs of the free trade area. How does the free trade area change what Africa needs? And the one point that we made as South Africa in that discussion is previously infrastructure development on the continent was based on the idea that if you invest more in infrastructure, then investors will hopefully come and utilize that infrastructure. And some investors did come, but not enough to change to make it a commercially viable proposition. What we've done is we've brought another element in, which is the free trade agreement. And this means for investors to move their goods across borders, they need more infrastructure. So there will be, we're enlarging, if you like, the commercial case. There's a very strong development case for African infrastructure development, but we're now also strengthening behind the development case a much stronger and more cogent commercial case. You've raised an interesting question, Honorable Msani, which is that rail systems are not synchronized across the continent. In fact, it's one more legacy of the past that different rail gauge systems, basically call it the tracks, developed in different parts of the continent. We were colonized by different European powers, and out of that, Africa has a very complex rail arrangement. Some years ago, I developed or presented a map to one of the meetings with a number of colleagues, where we mapped out the railway lines across the African continent. And what was fascinating about it is the railway lines looked like the legs of a spider. It looks like a leg of a spider because railway lines were moving from a mining town to the nearest port. Railway lines were not about connecting Africans with each other. Railway lines were about moving African raw material from the mine to a ship that takes it elsewhere in the world. And that has been, in answer to Honorable Meshwe's very, very interesting question on how did the legacy of colonialism impact on African underdevelopment. That is a classic example that we didn't build railways to unlock trade and economic development between ourselves. Those railways were built to shift the raw material of the continent to the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean, in other words, offshore. And what the new vision is, the new vision is about, in fact, reversing that legacy, building more transport networks between ourselves. We're developing what we call the North-South Corridor, which is to increase and strengthen the transport links between Cairo and Cape Town to be able to have much more trade. It's not just between South Africa and Egypt. It would then embrace all the countries that these road and rail and other corridors move through. So I'll come back to the other questions raised by Honorable Msani, but if I can just stay on Honorable Meshua's question on the legacy of colonialism. So rail is one example of it. The other side of it is that our economies became mining economies. And I hope, I don't know if Honorable Tring is in the room, but he's been consistently raising the issue around... thank you. He's consistently raised the issue around beneficiation, and rightly so, in my view, because what it points to is Africa breaking with a past, breaking with a role that others have defined for our continent that says you will be the producers of raw materials. And why not? Why don't we want to accept that role? Because it means we are largely prisoners of the commodity cycle. When mineral prices are high, our economies do well. When mineral prices drop, our economies are very, very negatively affected by that. So building more balanced economies is about having mining and agriculture. They're important and we must nurture them, but also downstream beneficiation or processing of those products. There's a classic example of cocoa. Cocoa, raw cocoa, fetches a very small value in global markets. High quality finished chocolates fetch an enormous price on global markets. And the difference between that is Ghana historically is the producer of the raw cocoa, and Belgium or Switzerland would be the producer of these high quality chocolates. The president of Ghana just issued a tweet in the last few days. Someone sent it to me saying that Ghana is now changing its direction. It doesn't want to export raw cocoa. It wants to in fact make chocolates. And when I visited one or two of the West African countries, I was delighted to receive samples of the chocolates that are made there. And that's what I think lies at the heart of African development. So the first legacy is infrastructure. The second legacy is in the lack of diversified manufacturing industries that could ensure that we trade to each other. If one country produces platinum and another country produces copper, what is there to trade with each other? You can't trade platinum for copper because people don't consume, they don't eat copper, they don't eat platinum. Platinum and copper are inputs into industrial development, into manufacturing processes. So you only want to buy copper from another a neighboring country if in fact you have the dynamic industrial base, the manufacturing base that uses that input, that copper input. So I think it's a really good question that Honorable Meshua has asked, and I think it exercises all of our mind how to break that pattern. Because when you have a pattern, you have vested economic interest around the pattern. And so you need to, any change you make, those interests that are negatively affected by it, and economics is about these kind of trade-offs, would be the ones that would be critical, would be mobilizing public opinion or lobbying and so on. But if Africa is to break with its development challenge, we have to do what is right for the continent. And that, I think, is what the message of the free trade area is about. Turning back to Honorable Msani's question on illicit financial flows, this of course remains a very significant problem that Minister Mboweni and the Ministers of Finance are treating and dealing with at African Union level. And globally also, because we can't only find an African solution for illicit financial flows, you've got to strengthen your means of fighting the exit of it, but you also have to have countries that are the recipients of these illicit flows to join. And so the OECD and the G20 have begun to look at illicit financial flows, and some work has been done on that. But that outflow of money illicitly from the African continent is the way in which our capital base is eroded. And you know, all development ultimately, honorable members, come down to having capital. You can't build and transform and change without having the resources that you invest to do that. And so when people shift resources abroad, they basically damage Africa's development in that. Honorable Msani, on how South Africa will ensure massive industrialization, I pointed in the last few slides on the industrial opportunities. I gave examples of some South African companies that are already making use of this, and we're now developing an export plan at sector level. I indicated it will be done at sector level, and we're being very ambitious, and we're going to ask that MPs give us a little bit of latitude on this, because we're not going to get it perfectly right the first time we try. But we now want to get districts to develop export plans, to say what is it that they themselves can export, and hopefully that effort will have some success. On rules of origin, Honorable Msani, countries don't set their own ones. It is negotiated, and while South Africa would like it to be very high, not only 50%, we would love it to be 70 or 80%. Of course, we negotiate with other countries, and in the course of negotiation, we have to find agreements. So not in every instance would we get the minimum that we would ideally like. On your important question on the African Union capacity, it remains a challenge, not only African Union capacity, but also customs controls in individual African countries. Across the continent, all of us need to strengthen and beef up our ability to check that products are in fact manufactured in the country that claims the source of manufacturing. And that is an important part of the work that will be done in future. So looking at the area of African Union capacity, we're building a new team in Ghana, in Accra, under the leadership of the new Secretary General, Wamkele Mene, and we hope that we can get a much stronger outcome by bringing in, we've emphasized, we've said to the new Secretary General that as South Africa we support that he brings in a younger group of technical experts able to do things in new ways, and that that we don't benchmark ourselves at a very low level. We've got to benchmark ourselves with the absolute best and try to ensure that we build really strong institutions. On the RECs, they would be integrated in that all REC trade would still largely be on the terms of the regional economic community. So in the case of SADC, it would be the SADC protocols and so on. But increasingly over time, these will begin to merge into the big story. So as I've indicated, we don't envisage immediately a change in the SADC arrangements for South Africa. But we do see a difference in how South Africa trades with West Africa or with Central Africa. So that's what the free trade agreement unlocks, is a wider opportunity for trade. Honorable Mishwe, the question around the how do we change that dramatic number, I've used it now quite a few times to highlight the importance of Africa's development challenge. And it will be done through the trade element that we've indicated here, creating conditions where it's easier for us to trade with each other, but also industrial development, also beneficiation, also what South Africa has as the master plans. And Ghana is now developing the same. Nigeria is developing sector plans. Egypt has got support programs for their industries. And Namibia, Eswatini, Lesotho, Botswana, and South Africa are collaborating on trying to develop a SACU set of value chains. We've had meetings now of the ministers and the officials there, and one of the senior officials of the IDC chairs the technical discussions on that between countries that are members of SACU. On the why we buy gold from other countries, neighboring countries have a, they produce the gold, so in other words, they mine the gold, but gold, before it's sold on global markets, still needs to be refined. Basically, it's these big smelters that are used to purify, refine, and melt down the gold from the ore to these gold bars that are then sold to banks across the world or to jewelers, and they produce this beautiful jewelry and so on. So South Africa has that capability. We can refine. So it's a form of beneficiation, that we can take a very raw material and we can turn it into something that central banks across the world can use. And that's why we buy the gold there, we refine it, and it's sold on. Sometimes when I say we buy it, it means even the producer in Namibia or where it may be would open a company in South Africa, would export it to its own company and refine it, meaning beneficiate it before it's sold on. And on the question on foreign direct investment, foreign direct investment fell across a number of African countries in 2019. Of course, there are these moves between years, and it seems to be, at the time, it was an expectation of investors that commodity prices may not continue to boom. All of this was pre-COVID, of course, and the data shows a drop in many commodity producers, a drop in foreign direct investment. The effort now by the president to try to harness a target of 1.2 trillion rand in fresh investment, which would be both domestic and foreign investment, can help. And I should indicate, South Africa is a big foreign investor in other African countries. We are, in fact, the biggest exporter of capital to other African countries to back industrial or mining or commercial products, projects or infrastructure projects. So we also provide capital using South Africa's quite deep capital markets that we have available. On the sale of electricity, these are historical figures for 2019. There's a constant, because electricity can't be stored at the moment, we don't yet have the technology to store it. If you produce more electricity in a 24-hour cycle than you need, you either lose that electricity or you sell it off. So we buy electricity, for example, from Mozambique via the Cahora-Bassa project, where they have a hydroelectric power generating project, and South Africa buys it. So Eskom looks at the grid, and whenever there is at any given point a surplus on the grid, they would sell. They would estimate over a period what the likely excess would be. So that there's a regional market that is developing around electricity. If I can turn then next to Honorable Nkosi's question, and thank you, Honorable Nkosi, for the comments that you've made. The agreements with the United Kingdom, the United States, and other developed countries remain in place. They don't get changed as a result of the entering into force of the AFC-FTA. But we have said that when it comes to new agreements in future, we must see whether we can't have some of these agreements as agreements that apply, that are negotiated by AFC-FTA signatories, because then we would have all trade negotiations are really negotiations where the scale of your market defines your power in the negotiation. You've got a very large market. You've got enormous influence and power in any negotiation. South Africa is a small economy, 60 million people. Even though we try to fight our corner as strongly as we can, of course, given the size of our market, we can't get as much opening of other markets as we may otherwise want. And so the African Continental Free Trade Area provides that potential. But first, it means hard work. It means the next few years just bedding down and implementing. And very often the sense that governments have is that once you've reached an agreement, automatically it will be implemented, you can move to the next agreement. Our experience is that hard as it is to get an agreement, it's even harder to implement it effectively when it's cross-border trade flows. So over the next few years, we really have to spend a lot of time, energy, and effort on bedding these things down, finding where the problems are and resolving them. If there's a huge backlog of trucks at Beit Bridge, it doesn't matter what you do on tariffs. You're not going to get trade flowing much more. So it means then finding the budget resources, rebuilding the road infrastructure leading to the border post, modernizing the border post itself. That means not just the buildings, but also the electronic systems that are used. Working with, in this case, Zimbabwe, to have a similar process, because it doesn't matter if only one side of a border post is efficient and upgraded. It needs to be both sides. If Zimbabwe does an upgrade but South Africa does not do it, you'll still have the bottlenecks, or vice versa. On the question, Honorable Nkosi, that you asked on the impact of the AfCFTA on let's call it the rationale for South African trade missions, I think our trade missions are very important in the work we do in the AfCFTA, because in those trade missions, the personnel there will help to smooth through problems that we may have. And of course, it does mean that we've got to maintain strong technical capability in the different trade missions, and diplomacy becomes increasingly economic as these things bed down. On the DERCO-DTIC interaction, it's a very positive one, and I must say my colleague, Minister Naledi Pandor, works very closely with ourselves, and of course the President, because this is such a significant project, the President led over the last 12 months the African Union. So there's a high degree of political coordination that we seek to ensure that all of the work is done, and the trade side is done by DTIC. The diplomatic work that underpins and supports the trade area is done by DERCO, and so we work quite closely together. I will, given the comments that have been made, also have a discussion with my colleague about the issues that have been raised in regard to reporting for oversight purposes in Parliament. So as Honourable Mpanza said, it's food for thought that we can all perhaps give some further thought to and deal with. I hope Honourable Mpanza and Chairperson Nkosi that I've covered sufficiently the issues that have come up. Some of the questions, some of the detailed answers would be available in the presentation, but I hope by connecting the different parts, the integrated approach of government is coming out a bit more clearly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister Patel. And then I think you have covered all questions and inputs very well, but it also indicates that we still have to have further engagements as these two portfolio committees. And then I think the offices of our chairpersons, maybe we'll look at that, and your office and the Minister Pandor's office will also look at these issues as to how do we then take the matters forward and further engagement. I just want to say in as a remark before I hand it over to Ubabu Nkosi again. So it is becoming clear, Minister, that in order for South Africa to maximize its benefits from trade with others in the continent, there is an urgent need for border management authority to be on place,
to facilitate movement of goods and services, as Honorable Msani has raised that issue before, through our borders, especially to the north through the Bay Bridge and other areas that we can see that they need to be opened again. Without going further and actually overstay our welcome, which was a very warm reception from the chairperson, on behalf of our chairperson, Honorable Mambe Hlala, and the portfolio committee of DECO, we want to thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi, as the chair of the Trade and Industry Committee, and the minister, for the good interaction that we had with one another. And as I've said earlier on, I don't think it's the end. It's just the beginning, and then the two offices of the chairperson will then look at how do we move forward going forward, and the office of the Minister Patel and Naledi. So with those words, Chairperson Ngwane, can I hand over back to you? And I think that will then allow us to excuse ourselves from the meeting, and then you can carry on with the business of the day of the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks very much, Minister. Over to you, Bamungos.
Yeah, let me just say strength to my colleague, to Mahambe Hlala, strength and resilience. And I think maybe, Minister, the point which will be quite important for us not to miss, is actually around COVID response and issues relating to that continental economic intervention, because those are very strategic issues. In the discussion we have just had, that we should actually work to the foundation of what we actually focus at, to those actually critical and important issues. I will actually then thank Ubabumbanza and ask that we move to the next part of the presentation, which is the first draft report of the DTIC second and third quarter report. Yes. Andre?
Mr. String's hand is up, so I'm assuming you still maybe want to ask the minister a question, Chair.
Let me hear if you say the hand is up, because what we may have to do, because we have run out of time, maybe no to those questions, ask that they are actually in writing back to all of us by the minister, if ever there's any. Mr. Tring, Honorable Tring?
No, Chair, I think that let me then leave it for our next meeting if we run out of time. I will pose my question at our next meeting with the Minister. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Tring. Secretariat, I'm sure we can be able to proceed then, but thanks to our colleagues from the International Relations and Cooperations. Can we actually pick up then the next presentation, which is the first draft report, DTIC second and third quarter?
Chair, we can proceed. Chair, the Minister wants just to, before we proceed, the Minister is designed, Chair.
Okay. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. May I request your permission to be excused? I have a meeting that I think the Secretariat has been informed of the NCCC.
Okay. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you.
We actually got your apology then. Thank you. Okay.
And wish the committee well.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Secretariat, I'm not sure who will actually be leading us on that part. Yes.
We will proceed. We just wanted to be chair.
Okay. Secretariat?
Yeah, we're sharing the doc now.
Okay.
we have the report. If we may continue, Chair.
Yes.
Chair, this report was distributed on Monday evening. I think on Sunday evening and yesterday, the cleaner version was forwarded to members. It's the second and third quarter financial and non-financial performance report that we must consider, Chair. Just to take the committee through, if we can go through the there's a basic introduction, Chair. Go down, Sekwanda.
Okay.
Sekwanda, Kenya. Just go to the financials. Yeah. Okay. Chair, this financials was distributed to members prior to the 17th, so members had information regarding the financials, so that document. The other issue...
Okay, it's moving quickly.
Yeah, I just... Yeah. So, okay. Okay, but this content here, Chair, was shared with members before the 17th of February already. So I don't know if members want me to go through it in a brief manner, or we proceed to the engagement that we had on the day, Chair. The issues raised by members.
Maybe if you can take a few minutes just going through, and then let's get here.
Now, the second quarter financial performance, Chair, the DTRG budget was 9.31 billion. By the end of the second quarter, the DTI spent approximately 4 billion of this amount, Chair, which accounted for 44% of the total annual budget. It was in line with the year-to-date targeted expenditure for the quarter, in which the DTI sees plan to spend 4.1 billion by the end of the second quarter. Therefore, the annual expenditure for that period was 95.9 billion or 2.3% of the budget. The main contributors with regard to the unextended expenditure were the competition policy and economic planning program with 73.2 million underspending and administration 59.2 and 28.8 million respectively. The financial and industrial financial program was the only program which reflected an overspend of 105.4 million or 12% of the program's approved budget. And the table below reflect all those expenditures, Chair. You can move forward. The table, now, can you go to the next narrative? In terms of economic classification, incentives, which are the second largest expenditure item, of transfer to entities were the only expenditure item that incurred over expenditure. I think we went through that already. Oh, there's the other one. Can we go down to the third quarter? Yeah. As indicated earlier, the total budget of DTIC was 9.3 billion, Chair, which was adjusted downwards by 37.4 million to 9.2 billion during the medium-term adjustment process in October 2020. The projected budget was 5.5 billion, but only 5.09 billion had been spent by the end of the third quarter, which is 4.2.1 million less than budgeted. The main contributors with respect to underspending were the industrial financing program, with 169.3 million underspending. The administration program with 87.4 million and the export development promotion outward development program with 40.9 million. The table below just reflects that matter, Chair. Do you go further now? Now, Chair, we come to the issues raised by the committee during deliberations. Dealt with positive economic growth. I'm not going to go through the content there, Chair, but there was questions raised regarding that. With regard to 3.2, there was issues raised with
with the trade policy in relation to BRIC countries. I think members go down. There was issues raised on the impact assessment of the COVID-19 regulations on the economy. There was issues raised regarding the impact of government spending on growing the economy. There was issues regarding the revising, the need to revise the trade policy and strategic framework that was done in 2010 and 2012, Chair. Then there was a question around the merger of the DTI and the EDD, and specifically about the internships in relation to that. Then there was questions raised about the Nkomazi SEZ support provided for that new SEZ chair. Then if you go down. Then there was questions raised around measures to support localization, because the committee felt that localization is quite critical still, Chair. If you go down. There was questions raised about the designation of poultry products as part of the designation process that's unfolding, and on the status of trade relations with the United Kingdom post-Brexit. Then there was issues raised about application for funding for those companies that are in dire need, Chair, and any if and the IDC responded to those questions and how they're doing. And also question relating to support for companies, and this was in relation to the, yeah. Then the last one, Chair, was protection for the steel industry. These were the questions raised by committees, and the responses to those questions are captured in the report, Chair. Chair, then we subsequently requested members to submit conclusions and recommendations for the committee to consider this morning, and we have received conclusions from the African National Congress, Chair, and no other party has submitted, so I don't know why we should proceed on the matter, Chair.
I'm not sure if ever there is still any conclusions from parties. And if ever
let me just double check in case while we were busy, parties may have submitted concluding remarks. It doesn't look like it, Chair. So may I propose that we maybe flag the ANC conclusions that we can consider, the committee can look at it and express a view on the Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair, there is this. This is the conclusion submitted, Chair. So, 3.1, the committee welcomed the positive economic outlook projected for 2021, which was informed by the easing of lockdown restrictions, as well as the progressive and urgent implementation of targeted interventions as outlined in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, including sectoral master plans, which are expected to mitigate the effects of Africa's underlying structural constraints. That is the first one, Chair. If members wish to comment or propose any changes to that, Chair, we can then move in that manner, if I may propose.
Okay. So I think it might be helpful to do it in that way. Are there any comments from the members for the 3.1, that's the first one you have just gone through now, isn't it?
That's correct, Chair.
Okay. Are there any comments or clarity-seeking questions? If not, if it's clear,
let me move
then
forward.
Acceptable, can we take the next one?
The committee, we can go the next one?
The
committee 3.2. 3.2.
The committee welcomed the study undertaken by the DTIC on the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on employment. The study showed that the economic shock caused by the COVID-19 pandemic had adverse effects on a significant number of industries such as tourism, alcoholic beverages and agriculture, both individually and through the linkages with other sectors. However, Stats South Africa recently released data showed a significant rebound in employment as the lockdown is progressively eased.
We actually would also ask members if ever they want to make comments or suggestions on the conclusion 3.2. Are there any comments from the House?
No, Chair.
In the absence, it's agreed to. Can we move to the next one?
3.3, Chair. The committee recognized the importance of trade relations with countries of the South, but such relations must support South Africa's industrialization drive.
Okay. 3.3. Any comments? So if none, I'll ask that we move to the next one, Secretariat.
With respect in 3.4, in trade relations between South Africa and the United Kingdom were not affected by its exit from the European Union. This was as a result of the SACUM-UK Economic Partnership Agreement, which was developed and negotiated by the DTIC and ratified by Parliament prior to the exit. Therefore, the committee welcomed the smooth transition.
Okay. Honourable members, if there are any...
Just a question on 3.4. In trade relations, is that inter-trade or should it just be trade relations between South Africa and the UK were not affected? I don't know whether the in should actually be there or whether it's in trade as kind of like inter-trade.
I see your point, Mr. Think. We can remove the in, yeah.
Okay, Honourable Thring. I think it does clarify that the trade relations between. Thank you. Are there any further comments or contribution on the point 3.4?
No.
If none, we can then move to the next point, 3.5.
3.5, the committee applauded the collaboration between government, labor, and business to establish the PPE local manufacturing partnership. This partnership ensured the local manufacturers were able to respond to the demands and build manufacturing and export capacity of personal protective equipment. It was further encouraged by the cooperative work done between the DTIC and the DOH and its entities in this regard.
Okay. Are there any comments, clarity or amendments? Item 3.5. If no comments, can we then move to the next item, Secretariat?
3.6. While the committee encouraged government's continued support of companies in strategic industry, it remained concerned that notwithstanding its support, the steel industry continued to shed jobs while making increased profits.
Okay. Is it clear? And can I
Chair?
Yes, Honourable.
Chair, no, again, I think just the reading of 3.6, while the committee encouraged government's continued support of companies in strategic industries, it remained concerned.
We'll do the final editing still, Chair. Noted,
okay.
Chair.
It remains concerned that notwithstanding its support to the steel industry. Okay. Thank you, Honourable Ring.
Comma of the support.
Come again.
Comma of the support.
support. That's correct. Mrs. Thurman's indicated that.
Okay. So that's 3.6, isn't it?
Yeah.
3.7,
Chair?
Okay. 3.7, can I check get members' comments? Or
shall I read it, Chair, before we...
Yes, please.
The committee was encouraged by the work done by the DTIC and the National Treasury towards the designation of the poultry sector. It requested that the DTIC accelerate the finalization of the designation.
Okay. Are there any comments? More of a collaborative work between the DTIC and the National Treasury. So if ever there's any comments, can we? It looks like someone is actually invading our space by not muting, probably.
I'm trying to.
Chair.
Can Yvonne, or I can't mute him, Yvonne or Sekwanda. The 3.8, the committee welcomed the collaboration between the DTIC and the local municipalities to facilitate the designation of special economic zones. The committee is encouraged that the DTIC continues working with all stakeholders across Darwin to facilitate the designation and functioning of SEZ. We'll correct the language of that last sentence as well, Chair.
Okay, 3.8. If ever there's any contribution on that conclusion, if ever the grammar secretary, I'm sure we can be able to have a follow through on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So unless maybe there's any further comments or question on the 3.8, if not, can we pick up the next one?
Chair, that was the last one, Chair. Chair, we also requested recommendations, but no party has submitted recommendations. So that is the report. We're still in the process of final editing. We'll probably final edit today during the course of today, Chair. And if parties wish to submit concluding remarks and recommendations, the committee is scheduled to finalize and adopt the report tomorrow, and we can consider those inputs tomorrow, Chair, if the committee so agree, Chair.
Because tomorrow we do have the part of formal consideration, which means you're actually suggesting that if we have recommendations, we should actually be able to raise it for that part of the agenda of our portfolio committee tomorrow.
Yeah, if parties wish to do so.
Okay. All right. No, thanks very much. And unless there are issues that parties would like to raise at this stage, can we actually acknowledge and welcome the presentations of those areas which we've got? Unless they are addition, I'm sure it does actually conclude the section of our discussion. Are there any further issues we'd like to pick up from the committee? Secretariat?
Nothing from outside, Chair, will be guided by the committee. What we can do, we will complete the process of editing, Chair, and include the conclusions into the draft report. And if parties wish to submit additional conclusion remarks or recommendations, we can consider that as part of the final formal consideration process, Chair.
And then we can consider that tomorrow at our meeting.
That's correct.
Okay.
Chair, but I can just, if I would like to request that if parties wish to submit, they should do so by the end of business today, so that we can just formulate those concluding remarks so that all proceedings are in order, Chair.
Okay. No, that's... Okay. So then we actually may have to move to the next item.
The next item is consideration of minutes, Chair. I think there is about six sets of minutes, starting with the last two of that we had in December. I think it's the 2nd and 3rd of December, Chair.
Okay. We will actually then ask you to fly to the minutes. We can actually then pick it up from there. And take us through each set.
Chair, there's a minute dated the 2nd of December. We got, during our agenda item was consideration of minutes, consideration of the process with regard to the position of the chairperson of the board of the National Lotteries Commission, and we considered the first quarter program. I don't want to see if there's any apologies. I think the majority of all members were present, or Ms. Yaku was, I think there's one apology, if I'm correct. Ms. Yaku apologized, Chair. So if you go to the introduction, is basically what I indicated what the purpose of the meeting was. We considered a couple sets of minutes, Chair. Minutes of the 17th November, 19th November, we go down. 24th of November, go down. 10th. And then we considered the process with regard to the position of the chairperson of the board of the NLC. Members did receive these minutes, Chair. It dealt with the appointment of the acting chairperson. And we looked at the interim report as well, Chair, that we tabled, which is captured in the report. We can go just go down. Go down. We just captured that interim report in the minutes, and then we resolved that the proposed procedure to be adopted with the option to adjust the proposed date if necessary, and parties should submit any additional proposed criteria for consideration at the next meeting. With regard to the consideration of the first quarter program, it was agreed to, Chair, if you go down. And then the meeting adjourned at 18 minutes past 3 until the 3rd of December.
Okay. Honourable members, if you can just check if you're comfortable with that, Honourable Hammonds.
Thank you very much, Chair. I move for the adoption of those minutes as tabled.
Okay. Thank you. There's a mover for adoption.
Ms. Mutahum, Chair.
Honourable Mutahum.
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the minutes.
Okay. There's a secondment of the minutes adoption. Are there any objections? If none, well, we will actually then conclude on the basis of the minutes being agreed to. Can we actually then fly to the next set, Honourable Members? Secretariat?
The following date was the 3rd of December, Chair. We considered the criteria for shortlisting of nominated candidates for the position of Chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission, Chair. I think we can we just go down. I don't think we had any. Ms. Montashe at the time submitted, and Mr. Thing submitted an apology, Chair. Chair, that is just basically the introductory processes which we captured. Chair, then we look at the criteria for the position of chairperson of the NLC, Chair. Then there was the deliberations, Chair, and some matters were. We had to vote on, Chair, as captured in the minutes, Chair.
Chair.
Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Hermans.
I think you must just go to Andre, where it speaks about apologies, because you say there were no apologies submitted.
No, I thought there was two. Ms. Yaku.
No, just go see what's in your text.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, in the text, maybe. Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Go down in the introduction, Sekonda. In the introduction, in the text. I'll just have to maybe see.
We will correct that.
My apologies. We'll correct that. We will add those two names to that.
Okay. I can see that because it says no apologies after the way. Yeah. It's confirmed that, yeah. Thank you, Honorable Hammonds. Yeah.
Go down?
Yes.
I mean,
let's go scroll down.
Mr. Kaplis, am I correct?
Andre.
Yes.
Yes, Kaplis.
Yes, you are. I just see by 2.4, the chairperson submitted the following proposals for consideration. I think it should be Mr. Cuthbert submitted the following proposals for consideration. Is that not correct?
We can say the chairperson must submit the following proposal from Mr. Cuthbert for consideration.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we'll make that amendment.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Cuthbert. Are there any further points? Let's actually scroll down.
I think that would apply to the next one and to the subsequent ones that I've prepared.
There will be the consequential amendment as a result of that, Chair. We'll fix that. Can you speak now, Mr. Kwanda?
Okay.
Mr. Kwanda, move down.
Chair.
Yeah, Honorable Tring.
Chair, I know that I submitted my apologies for that meeting, but I'm just trying to make sense of the reading of 2.5 and 2.6. It's got in a. Is it May? Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. I'm sorry. I was a little slow. I'm sorry.
They write in Greek and
we started early this morning.
Yes, it was an early start.
Yeah. Well, the point is that we're actually trying to speak in English. They write it in Greek.
We just use the format of the National Assembly minutes, so there is an alignment to that language.
A's and A's.
Yeah, and we say I's. Yeah.
We say I's. So nays is a no. Eyes is yes.
If you can go down to the
okay.
I think that is just the capturing the essence, and we'll make the consequential amendments we require, Chair. Then the meeting is on at 2:05 on the 4th until the 16th of February. Mrs. Hermans, raise the hand, Chair.
Honourable Hermans.
Chair, I wish to propose the adoption of the minutes as amended.
As amended? There's a mover. Hammonds?
Chair?
Ms. Mwatsi?
Yes. Oh, Honorable Mwatsi?
I second, Chairperson.
As seconder, as amended, Mwatsi? Yes. Mwatsi? Are there any objections? If none, can we take the next set, Secretariat?
The next set was the 16th of February. We considered the first court amended draft program and received the state report from the NRCS on progress regarding implementation of extended run strategy, Chair.
Okay.
Can go down. I think all were present, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah. We adopted the agenda, Chair, and then the next item was the consideration of the draft program, Chair. You should remember that there was changes to the parliamentary program, which required us to amend our program, and the committee agreed to that particular program. Then we had a briefing by the NRCS on the implementation of its turnaround strategy, and the committee raised a number of questions, issues. If you go down,
Okay.
Then at the conclusion of that, the meeting adjourned at 10:46 until Wednesday the 17th of
right.
Mrs. Hermans raised the hand, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Hermans.
Chair, I propose the adoption of the minutes as tabled.
Thank you. There's a mover for adoption. Can I get a second?
Ms. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honourable Mbuyani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I support the adoption.
There's a secondment of the minutes. Is there any objection? If none, we'll look at the set before us, 17th February.
Okay, on the 17th, we received the briefing by the Department on the second and third quarter report on financial and non-financial performance, Chair. If we go down, I just want to see if there's any, Mr. McPherson submitted an apology, Chair.
Apologies, yeah.
If you go down. Chair, this is short minutes because the report that we just looked at captured the essence of this engagement, Chair.
Okay. Unless maybe there are any comments from members, if not, can we actually agree with the records of the minutes?
Chair, Mrs. Hermans and Mr. Mbuyani raised their hands, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Hermans.
Please, Mr. Mbuyani, propose I'll pick him.
Mr. Mbuyani.
Oh, okay. Mbuyani, you are giving the baton.
Thank you very much, Professor. I propose you are talking.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Mbuyane and Hermans. Can we take the next set?
The next set was on the 24th of February, where the committee shortlisted candidates for the position of chairperson of the board chair. If you go down, I think we have an apology from Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, and then go down, Sekwanda. Chair, then we went through the process of the shortlisting of candidates, Chair, and the whole process is outlined as the committee agreed to, where each party submitted names for consideration, and the committee at the end of that process go to 2.8, further down. The committee resolved that it will consider the nominated candidates that should be shortlisted at its next meeting. Other political parties not present should be requested to submit their respective shortlist of candidates to the secretariat by the end of business today, which we did, Chair. And that meeting adjourned at 10:40 until Friday, 26th of February.
Okay. There's a set of minutes before you. I'm sure it's a process you still remember, Honour Members. Can I get a mover?
Ms. Mutahum, Chair.
Honourable Mutahum.
Chair, I move for adoption of the minutes of the 26th of February.
Thank
Chair.
You very much.
And Ms. Mwakse, Chair.
Thank Honourable you, Chair. I second the move.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mwakse. Are there any objections? If not, can I ask that we take the next set of the minutes? Secretariat?
I think I don't know if there's another one, Shabanda. The 26th, yes. The 26th of February, where we formally considered the nominated of candidates to be shortlisted, Chair. We go down to see who was present, and I think all members who are present, Chair. And we committee completed the process of the nominations, Chair. As you can see, we put the table in as was selected on the day of that discussion, Chair. And then if we go down, Mr. Ponder, I think there was a consensus of the process. What the committee resolved that the secretaries distribute the process document to all members. And the meeting adjourned at 5 to 5 to. Okay.
Yeah. So let me just check with members if there's any amendment or correction. If it's in order, then it's, let's see if ever there's acceptance of the minutes by the members of the committee.
Need a move and a second, the Chair.
Yes. Honourable Member.
Mr. Mbuyani, raise his hand, Chair.
Honourable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you once again. I propose that today we are done.
Okay, there's actually acceptance.
Mr. Chair.
I second the adoption of the minutes as table, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? If not, can we then agree to? I think that was the last set of minutes we had, Secretary.
That was the last set of minutes today. We'll bring the other sets of minutes for tomorrow to the meeting, Chair. Up till Friday past, Chair.
Yeah, and then those were the ones that were circulated as well to members. I'm sure they have access to them.
Yeah.
So if members can have a look so that we can be able to go through that tomorrow.
Yeah. Now I will submit it again, Chair. I don't think I submitted those minutes, but we'll do so today, Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, I'm sure that actually... Honourable Chair,
the final correction from myself with regards to the minutes. The nays is actually N-A-Y-S and not N-A-Y-E-S. So, in terms of the plural, Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think, Honourable Pring, you're quite correct. It should be actually written properly, even if it may not be the English we have, because the nays and the a's, I think, let's make sure that the record is proper.
We will correct
we'll fix that, yeah. So that's fine then, thanks very much. I'm not sure if ever there's any other issue, because I think that was the last set of minutes we have today.
That's correct, Chair. That was the last of the minutes we have today, so we concluded the minute process, Chair.
Okay. On the agenda that we adopted for today's meeting, I think that was actually the last item on the agenda.
That's correct, Chair.
Unless maybe there's other issues members would like to raise, can we actually then convene our meeting? Will be starting at 9 tomorrow morning.
That's correct, Chair.
We will be looking at the formal consideration of the DTIC second and third performance report. There will be also SEZ implementation and the SABS progress on implementation.
Chair,
so honourable members, unless maybe
yes. If I may, Chair, and we'll also look at the draft program for the second quarter, Chair.
Oh, okay. So can I ask then that we then have that added as a last point on the issues listed, Secretary?
That's correct, Chair. We'll add it to the agenda.
Because technically, it's actually for this term,
No,
I don't see them.
Chair, Chair, for tomorrow, we look at the second quarter for coming, that program.
Yes.
Chair. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. No, thanks very much. Can we then actually meet tomorrow? And thank you very much for your contribution in today's meeting. I think our meeting stand adjourned. Can we actually meet tomorrow at 9? Thank you very much, Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.